Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
It is News Talk. It's the Anton Savage Show. If you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087-1400-106. We are joined by the one and only Dahi O'Shea. Dahi, good morning.
How are you, sir?
I am very good. Dahi, can I ask you something that I think I talked to you, maybe I talked to you privately about it before, but I don't think it's that private, but I've always been curious about it. You told me that in conversations with your dad, that if you were in a public forum where there were other people around you, you would use either Irish or English. But that in a direct conversation between the two of you, you never, ever had a real conversation in English.
No, never happened. My father always spoke Irish. Just my father came from the Gaeltacht area in Dingle. My mother originally from Castle Island, which would be mid-Kerry. Now, they met each other in the 60s in America. So they came back home in 1969. And we always spoke Irish to my father and English to my mother. Now, when Rita, my wife, came back to West Kerry for the first time, she said, "What the heck is going on here?" Because my father spoke Irish to my mother, which she picked up from being in the Gaeltacht for 40 years. And my mother spoke English back to her. And Rita thought this is the bizarrest situation she had ever come across and was actually wondering, was it actually worth marrying into the family because of it?
And was that just an organic reality, or was that because of a commitment to the language from your dad?
No, it was organic. Like, say, even when I go back home now, people I went to school with, it's straight into Irish. And do you know what, Anton, we don't even think about it. It happens naturally. It's organic. There's nothing forced about it at all. And that was the way with my dad as well. Like, even back in the local pubs now, like, it would be rare for us to speak English to people, unless, obviously, if people came in with no Irish, we'll speak English to them. Do you know what I mean? But other than that, it's probably mostly Irish that would be spoken.
Because it's funny, because I would have thought that the time that he spent in the States might have acted as a sort of a fire break, and that you wouldn't return to the native tongue even if you returned to your home place afterwards. But that didn't happen.
No, probably I'd almost say the opposite, Anton. Do you know what I mean? Say he was in America during the 60s and civil rights, and he'd have seen a lot of that. And I suppose he'd have seen, say, the Irish language as part of our civil rights in one sense, you know what I mean? And the resurgence of it, and was a big part of that as well, because he wrote a load of books and everything. So I'd almost say coming home from America after spending 10 years there, he probably realised more what the Irish language meant to him and to other people as well, and might have seen it, I suppose, waning a small bit at that stage as well. But that seems to have turned the corner as well now.
How did you perceive the writing of the books? Was that just a thing that Dad did in his spare time, or was it significant? Did you know his motivation for it at the time?
Do you know, my father drove a truck for 40 years, Anton, and he wrote the first couple of books while he was still driving the truck. Like, he'd be pulled over having his lunch and sit down and write a couple of pages, and I remember him writing on his days off. But, like, my father must have published around 22 or 3 books that I don't know about the rest of the guys in the family, but I read part of one of them one time. I know. It's when I say it out loud, and come here, my father's passed sadly about 11 years ago, and I'm looking at a bookshelf here now with about 10 of his books, and I have to go back and read them. But see, the thing is, we heard all the stories before in the house, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the stuff he wrote, so this is what I'm claiming anyway. Look, there was no need for me to read the books, because we'd heard all the stories anyway.
But did you take particular pride in the fact that he... what I'm trying to get at is, did you see him as a truck driver with a sideline in writing, or did you see him as a writer with a sideline in truck driving?
I suppose, like, when he retired, maybe, yeah, he was the writer than more so than anything else. But, like, for a long, long time, like, his first book came out, I think, in 1986 or something. So I was only around 10 years of age. So he was the truck driver who had a side hustle of writing. But I think the writing part took off then when he had more time and stuff. Because not long ago, my father could drive a truck for, actually, it was actually 6 days a week during the summer. He played music as well at night. He played the accordion, so he played for Wednesday, Thursday and Friday night as well. So the man was very, very busy, you know.
I was, by the way, you mentioned the turning 10 in 1986. I believe congratulations are in order. Next weekend, your birthday?
It is, yeah, next Sunday, yeah.
Happy birthday.
48. Thank you very much, Anton. 48 next Sunday.
Still a very young man.
Still a very... Did we have this debate before? Who was older? Am I? I know there's a few months in it, Anton, between you and I.
Oh, it's nip and tuck. It's a photo finish, Dahi, where you could barely... You could hardly get a cigarette paper between us.
No, I think it's kind of like a race sometimes. That you're ahead sometimes and I overtake you on occasion as well.
So go back then to when you started to do the telly stuff. Was that a career that you thought your folks would be proud of, or did you think they'd think you should go get a real job?
Well, like I say, I had never any ambition ever to be on TV or anything, Anton. It was like if you asked me would I have a job on TV when I was say 20 years of age, if you asked me which is more likely, you'd have a job on TV or someday get on the moon, and I'm thinking, well, the moon, or that they'd probably have kind of flight for people maybe in 40 years time. So I go for the moon. Like say, when I was in school, I never wanted to be in school that time because I felt like I was kind of caged inside them. So, but I got through that and I was happy enough then to go on my merry way to get a job, and I finished school. And I suppose, like a lot of people say our age, it was a twilight zone where maybe 10 years previous, half the class would have went to college. 10 years after that, the majority went to college. So I decided, okay, I'd like to become a teacher. So, which was kind of weird for a fellow who didn't want to go to school at all. I wanted to go back to school. So that was really the plan. I came out of Mary Eye, then I just finished in June, got the results, I think in August. I was working on the ferry boats out of the Blasket Islands, and somebody asked me, did I want to go on TV to do the weather at the weekends? And I said, what? I said, what kind of a question is that? Like, this is kind of total bizarre altogether. So I'm not trained. And, oh, so we'll take care of it. Come up and have a look at it. So I went up and had a look at it. And then 2 weeks later, I was doing the weather at the weekend on TG Carr.
Does that mean that you had no nerves?
That means that I had no cop on at all, Anton. Like, what was I doing? Like, I still look back going, what the heck were you at, lad? And it escalated from there. I was part-time teaching at the same time because I was supposed to go off and get a dip to become a teacher. I didn't get it the first year. The second year, I got it in Maynooth and in Queens and Belfast. And I got a full-time job in TG Carr the same week. And I decided to go with the TV. And back to your question, my parents think it was mad. They probably did, but they also said, oh, sure, he'll go back to teaching now next year when this whole thing blows up in his face.
And at that stage, TG Carr was fairly new and fresh and young and only just born, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I said, that was September 99. So I'm 20, would you believe it? I'm 25 years on TV in September. So TG Carr was only 3 years old at that stage. And I think the average age of people working back there was around 24. And there was a fierce excitement back there. And there probably still is. I've been back there in ages now. But even when I left in 2010, there was always that excitement of... you can achieve anything. Like their motto was "Sue Lella, a different perspective," and like that was energizing for us. Though you'd look at them, yeah, we look at it now, but just look at it in a different way, and then you take that through life as well. So I learned a huge amount back there, unknown to myself, Anton.
I remember listening to Dave Letterman talk about his drinking, and he said that at some stage he found himself thinking, you know, they've given you a second TV show, and if you keep drinking the way you're drinking, you're not going to hang on to it, and you'll spend the rest of your life regretting the opportunity. At a certain point, did you think, I'm on to something here, and I need to start treating it more than the bit of crack before I potentially go back to teaching?
Yeah, there was, like say, that time Spiddle, because I was living inside in Galway City, and you'd have to drive through Spiddle coming home from TG Carr. Like, we worked 7 days a fortnight, so you worked 11 to 11, so you'd leave at 11 o'clock at night. And I remember even on a Tuesday night, the crack was so good, I'd turn off my phone going through Spiddle, because the phone would ring, or you'd get a text message saying there was something happening, and it was Mardi Gras. Like, the crack was absolutely mighty. And again, like say, you have a few bob when you're 24, and it was brilliant, like. But like say, I was underwater for so long, and then I was doing all these other gigs as well. I got to do some of the music awards for TG Carr, and then I was lucky enough to go off traveling around the States. And I suppose it, maybe about 2 or 3 years into it, I said, okay, this is probably it now. Again, with no huge plan of what I wanted to do or anything, but I was happy enough to go, to keep going the road I was going, and all certain things just fell into my lap. And in one sense, when I moved to RT in 2010, that kind of happened with the Rose of Tralee as well. Well, Red Darcy was there before me. He moved off. I'd been doing some of the heats in the background, and I'd been on the judging panels and so on and so forth. So a lot of it is being in the right place at the right time, and a small bit of luck, Anton. If you don't have a small bit of luck, whether it's in a job or playing a football game or a hurling match or in life, do you know, a small bit of luck will carry you a long way.
There was a principle that Bunny Carr had, which he described as the very man principle. And he said that what you needed to be was, you needed to effectively walk through the cafeteria at the point when a producer is thinking about a new show and they go, Dahi, the very man.
Yeah. 100%. Like I got more gigs inside in the RT canteen. You can't even go in there now. But I don't know what you get if you went in there now. But you know, just what you said there, Anta, being at the right place at the right time. He's the man, and they see you. So you have to be out and about all the time as well. And I suppose it's one thing, like say, being in the afternoon, you're there all the time as well. Like, so people tend to see you. Like,
what do people say to you when they come up to you in the street?
Oh my God, I can't believe you're so thin, because you don't, all you're doing is eating all day on television. That's what people say to me. And then there was a posh woman, she came up to me and went, oh my God, Donnie, I thought you'd be a lot bigger now and all the food you have, right? And I said, I have worms. She said, excuse me? I said, I have worms. And if you saw the puzzle on her, which you walked away with me, I was just in no form that day.
Yeah, because it's funny the way that people juxtapose that either you're younger, taller, shorter, fatter, thinner.
Yeah.
There's always, and you never know which one is the compliment. Is it better that you look better in reality than you do on the TV?
Yeah, I know what you're, yeah, and I always say that when they do actually say I look younger, I say, look, I have to age myself up for more on the TV, do you know what I mean? Like, I can't be the trophy husband on the TV, you know? And then they look at me going, is this guy serious? And they're that I'm not, you know? So...
What about doing the roles the first time? Because whatever about the pressure of doing TG Carr when you're 24 and it's a bit of crack and sure, there's no harm and I can go back to Mary I. The Rose of Tralee is not only a national institution, but down your neck of the woods in the kingdom, it's very significant. Did that weigh heavy on you the first time?
It was funny because say, the build-up to the Rose is one thing, but the build-up to the Rose of Tralee in Tralee is something else altogether, because there are loads of balls, there are loads of parades and so on and so forth. And like, I remember going down and they were saying, you know, there's over 1 million people watching, and I'm going, oh yeah, okay, no problem. Then they start talking about people like Gay Byrne and stuff, and you go, okay, hang on a second here now, you know, this is serious, all right. But I do remember that minute before I went out on the first night, I can still even picture it in my head, and there was around 2,000 people in the audience, and there was just an excitement, Anton, going, okay, this is it now, lad, do you know what I mean? And going back to kind of what you were saying earlier on, was there a point where you said, okay, this is the real job now? There was a real sense walking out that first night in 2010 that this is the real job now, lad. You blow this, it's all over, like, you know.
Over the years, Dahi, you and I have talked about a couple of the strange and wonderful gigs that you've had. So we've talked about the fact of you being the world's first Irish language three-ring circus master of ceremonies. What do you call a lad who runs a circus? What's the fella in the top hat? What's the proper term?
Ringmaster,
exactly. Thank you. Yeah. We've talked about you running ferries out to the Blasket Islands. We've talked about a whole lot. The one that you are credited with, now it's Wikipedia, so I don't know if I believe it or not, but I find hard to square, is that you were once a bouncer.
Yeah, I was.
Now, does that suggest that, is there a meanness in there? Is there a tough Dahi? Is there a Dahi that if I come up wearing runners and you don't let me in, we're going to go round and round in the street?
Back then, I could handle myself, Anton. Not so much now. But I was. This was back when I did my leaving cert, right? And I tell everyone, I got 700 points by leaving self, right? That's because I did it twice, right? So the first time anyway, in 1994, I was kind of quite happy that I'd my bit done for the leaving self. My brother Danny was in America and I was going over. We were all American citizens to our parents. So we were all allowed to go over. So I got a job over anyway in the summer of 94 in a place called Excalibur in the middle of Chicago as a doorman, as a bouncer. And I was 18 years of age saying, sorry, lad, you're only 20. You can't come in here. You just can't come in here. you're just going to have to go away, please. Come back in a year's time. And it was the bizarre situation. No, it was run by an Irish guy, of course, right? So that's how I got the gig.
You were the bouncer in Excalibur in Chicago downtown.
Yes, downtown Chicago. Right next to, it was right next door to Rock and Roll McDonald's at that time.
By God, that, I imagine there are evenings doing that where you're taking your life in your hands, Dahi.
Do you know, it was funny, like, it was a strange place because you could meet anybody inside there. I met Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant inside there, who played with the Chicago Bulls at the 7th. They were at the height of it, right? So I was inside the toilet doing my business, right? These two guys, oh, how are you doing? That's not too bad. They were asking me where I was from, and I was asking where they were from, because I had the clue who they were, right?
Hang on a minute. You're working in Chicago and Scottie Pippen walks into the bar and you don't know who he is. 7 foot tall Chicago Bulls Scottie Pippen.
The very man. I didn't recognize him because there was no social media that time. Like, I'd have heard the name, of course. And
what do you mean there was no? So it was still ESPN. Like, he was in the Chicago Bulls, Dahi.
West Kerry, RTE1 and Network 2. Shinny. We didn't even have TG Carr at that time, right? So we were two channel land. So anyway, I was peeing away. Anyway, next second, I said, oh, Jesus, lad, how are you doing? Not too bad. Chat, what are you doing? I'm here. Yeah, I'm working here. What are you doing? Oh, I'm here as well. Okay, good luck. Everyone's there. Oh, my God, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant here. I said, where are they? Oh, those two lads, yeah, I took a pee with them about 20 minutes ago. And the whole place burst out laughing. I didn't know who they were, lads. Oh, my God. They were there for about a week trying to pull themselves off the ground. Like,
I have to say my favourite fact about you in life now, Dahi, is knowing that you had a pee with Scottie Pippen. This has just brought me great joy.
I know. Yeah, there we have it. Like, and Horace Grant, don't forget him as well.
I overfocus on Scotty. My apologies to Horace Grant. If he's listening, I apologise to him. Dahi, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on.
Todd, thanks very much.
That is Dahi O'Shea. That's it for us this morning. A big thank you to the team on the Anton Savage Show, led, of course, by Aoife Breen. Hugo De Silva-Scott was on sound. We will see you back here next Saturday at 9. Bye-bye.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.